Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another Distressed Pro Professional podcast in the podcast series. I'm really happy to have back again today Troy Fullwood. He visited with us maybe a month or two ago, and we had an awesome session where we talked about how to get started in the note business, and you can find that elsewhere on the website. And I've invited him back today because the feedback was so good that I just I know that people want more, and so he's agreed to come on and talk about three key things that every note buyer looks for. And this is going to be kind of a rapid fire. We're just going to get this out there so you can be thinking about it. And Troy, in case people missed the first podcast, if you could just go through and tell us a little bit about why you're qualified to be talking to us about it.
Well, Brad, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you and to speak to your group of listeners, and want to thank everybody for taking time to listen to today's call and give you a little background on myself. I'm the owner of Pinnacle Investments. We're based here out of Phoenix, Arizona, and I've been in the note business since 1997, as I'm thinking, it's kind of scary. I've been at this for 14, 15 years now, and I started out in the note business, just flipping notes and making quick money, connecting buyers and sellers together, and through that, I grew it into a private equity firm that we launched back in 2006, and after that launch, we built it up very rapidly and very aggressively through purchasing notes, and then turned around and sold it back in 2009. And we over the course of my career, I've done well over 11,000 note transactions, and wow. Some of them single asset trade, which is a single note, and some of them portfolio trades. My client list is everybody from the U.S. government all the way up to a street level investor who carried back a note on a house. And through that time, I've been exposed to so many different types of notes. And one of the things that I love about the note business is that it's a very creative environment. And part of my personality is about creativity. I've always enjoyed creativity, and I found a way of taking something that, one, I enjoy doing, being creative, but also I enjoy math, and combining them into a field of interest like the note world. And so that being said, it gives you kind of a quick overview of what we've been able to accomplish and the time frame I've been at it. And We weathered some storms. We weathered the storms like a lot of other people have out there through the economies, the highs and the lows. And, you know, we're still here, you know, and that says a lot for anybody who's in business. If you can weather a few seasonal changes and you're still standing, that's a positive thing. So
right.
So that's a little bit about us and our firm.
Well, cool, and so I'm looking forward to this because I've got to tell you that I get so many questions, as you would imagine, on the site like this and with the type of audience that we have. I get so many questions. There's such an interest right now in notes and getting into the note business, and you know, people who listen to me regularly, they know that I work for banks as an auctioneer, selling foreclosures and REO and the occasional note. And I've got to tell you that we have had among our clients and buyers, of course, but among our clients, they've been become increasingly interested in notes as a disposition method, where before we'd go right to a foreclosure auction, and that's really changing right now, and I know that a lot of people are catching on to this, and so to have you on today to run through some stuff for us is just awesome. So I really appreciate it.
Well, it's my honor. It's my honor.
So you want to just get right into it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about today was there are three key elements, initial key elements, that an investor looks at when they're buying a note. And what I'm going to be speaking about today is is an investor purchasing a performing loan. And for sake of conversation, I'm just going to keep it isolated to a residential style transaction. And I know that there's, you know, there's commercial and there's residential, but I'm going to, for today's conversation, we're going to speak from a residential perspective. And as a residential note investor, and the fact that we've done the majority of our trades have been in the residential sector, we've come to understand that at an initial glance at a transaction, there are three key things that we look at. And one is, the first one we look at is borrower's credit.
Okay.
And we get offers in here on a regular basis. And it's always interesting when people send us an offer or they send us an outline of what they're selling, which what they're selling is the paper. They're selling the note.
Yeah.
They'll tell us, okay, the house sold for this, and the down payment was this, and the first payment date was this, and the interest rate was this, and they've made X amount of payments, and they've done this. And they fail to let us know what the borrower's credit is. And that is critical in the world in which we live in. And I want to put a little cliff note here, or caveat here, that I understand that not all credit scores are created equal. I understand that it's not always an accurate reflection of what actually has happened. And I think everybody in the industry sees it that way as well, or the majority of the people in the industry see it that way. The simple truth is that we still have to run a borrower's credit, and we still have to get an understanding of their credit worthiness, because where we get our money and our capital through lines of credit and things of that nature, they require it. And that is a characteristic of the transaction. That tells us the quality of that borrower and their propensity to make payments in a timely fashion. A lot of times people bring deals to us and they say, well, you know, just go ahead and buy it. And you know what? You're buying it at a discount anyways. And so if you have to foreclose on it, you can foreclose on it. You'll be just fine. And okay, that's not the business we're in. Note buyers are in the business of collecting payments, so we want to make sure that there are characteristics that support and put the odds in our favor that we will get our payments.
Sure.
and one of them is credit. So we look at that. And credit scores that typically that investors are seeking are typically right around 580 to greater, so 580 plus. The credit scoring system ranges from 850 to 350 is the range of credit. I've never seen anything down at 350, but I have seen 420, and that was some pretty bad stuff.
Yeah.
But typically we want to stay at 580 or 600 and greater.
Okay. And so for various reasons in my real estate career, I've had access to these things. But for those who don't know, what's the mechanics behind that? Can you just touch on how you'd even go about that, checking someone's
Absolutely.
Credit?
Absolutely. What we do is we have a service. It's a what they call a reseller service, and that we work with to pull credit reports on files that we buy.
Mm-hmm.
And what a reseller service is they have tapped into the three major credit bureaus, and when we order our credit report from the reseller, they go out to the three bureaus, pull in all the data onto one report, and give it to us.
Cool.
And we do it because it's simpler, it's easier, it costs, I don't know, around $18 or $15, $15 or $18 for a tri-merge, which is all three bureaus. And it gives us everything. It tells us the public record. It tells us the credit score. It tells us lates and positives and all that fun stuff. So
cool.
That's how we go about doing it.
Well, thanks. Thanks for laying that out. So what else about that?
Well, the thing when we're reviewing credit, we're not typically turned off by judgments and things of that nature. Or even medical bills. What we're looking at is, okay, what is this person's ability, and where are they currently at? We understand that bad things happen to good people, And we understand that if you, you know, if you're 30 days late on a credit card, it's gonna, it could potentially hit and ding your credit score pretty heavily.
Hmm.
That doesn't scare us. That's not something that we look at and we go, wow, okay, this person was 30 days late on their MasterCard on their $25 payment last month, because we understand that mail systems and all that have a tendency to be calculated into the delivery time. But at the end of the day, what we're looking for is just, where's this person headed? What is this telling us? Are they coming out of a season in their life where they were financially challenged and not able to pay bills, or are they pretty stable and they seem to be consistently making money, paying their bills, making money, paying their bills, or are they potentially maybe headed towards a direction of sliding off the cliff where they're getting, you know, too far in debt?
So for you, if you want to hold this loan and collect payments, because I do know, especially in the commercial space, you know, for a lot of guys, it's loan to own, or they buy to foreclose. You're looking to get payments over the long term, and for you, it sounds like it's really more like a buyer credit profile than just a straight up credit score, where you're really going to look at it and assess the person on sort of the whole view of how they're handling their finances.
Absolutely. When we're looking to purchase a performing residential loan, we're looking to put it into our portfolio to create long-term residual value. And in doing so, we have to look at it as a potential of what might go wrong. It's, as I tell a lot of people, I said, as note buyers, we have to take a pessimistic approach to the deal, and it's not that we're negative thinkers. What we're looking for is, okay, what's wrong with this deal? And once we identify what's wrong with that deal, can we live with that?
Right.
You know, if what's wrong with the deal was a low down payment, okay. If what's wrong with it is a low credit score, why is that? If what's wrong with it is this, or, you know, and I'm not trying to be negative, but the reality of it is, when somebody brings me a $100,000 note and I'm going to be outlaying $80,000 cash for it, I want to make sure my $80,000 cash is fairly well protected above and beyond just taking back the house.
Yeah.
So we look at it from, what's wrong with the deal, and can I live with this issue?
Okay. Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, it's an $18 investment. And how much time do you put into evaluating a deal like you just described?
On the credit side, 5 minutes.
Yeah, because you've been doing it long enough that you can run through and you can determine whether or not this is somebody you want to do business with or you want to be involved with like that.
Absolutely. You know, in all due respect and all fairness to everybody in America, most credit reports are pretty clean and pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
They may not have a long credit history. They may not have, you know, a lot of stuff. Or, you know, most people are actually really good borrowers and really good payers and have really good intentions. And you know, I always tell people, I said, if you think about the situation we're in as a country, and they say, well, you know, foreclosure rates, you know, they were starting to get towards double digits there for a while in the residential sector. And the media was just beating it up and beating it up and beating it up. My take on that, I said, well, even if we're at 9%, that means 91% of the population is still making their mortgage payment.
Right.
That, I mean, if your child were to go to school and get 91% on his spelling, that'd be a great day.
Yeah, that's not too bad. Not too bad when you're like that.
Yeah, so when I look around, I go, okay, we've got some challenges. Yeah, there might be some things that aren't ideal. But the sky's not falling. It's just some bad things have happened to some good people, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater either.
Right.
We're just simply looking at this for what it is. So we take that approach to it because our intention is to be intelligent when we deploy capital, and to understand, okay, this is the negative side of this deal. This borrower has poor credit. They've gotten, you know, they've been paying on this house for 4 years.
Yeah.
And their poor credit is because they, the husband broke his leg, and he went to the hospital, and there were a bunch of miscellaneous bills that they couldn't pay, or the insurance company didn't pay, and so the hospital or the medical people were relentless, and they threw a bunch of stuff at their credit, and it's a bunch of crazy Mickey Mouse medical bills ranging from $50 to $400, and that's not necessarily a true indication of who they are as a person.
Yeah.
What that is a very aggressive collection agency trying to destroy these people, and you can see that, you know, if their car payments are paid and their credit cards are paid and all in their house payments paid and all this other stuff, and you've got this isolated moment in time, you can pick up on that. And that, to me, is not a scary thing. That is, okay, unfortunately, they broke their leg, and he was out of work, and, you know, he paid his other things, but he didn't pay this, and chances are he'll pay those other medical bills in time, and
right.
Life goes on.
I don't want to beat you up too much on this, or just, you know, pound away at this one item, because I know we have three and we've got some pretty limited time today. But I can hear, you know, I can hear someone in my audience saying, well, and they're looking for a reason that they can't do this, and they're going to say, well, but how am I authorized to do that? How am I allowed to check their credit? How does that happen? And you have an answer for that for them?
Absolutely. And that's a great question. I get that asked quite a bit myself. And that is, as an investor, when I'm looking to purchase a note, if I have a copy of the note, then under the Fair Credit Collection Act of 1970, Section 601C3 or 3C.
I won't hold you to that.
Okay. It states that as an investor whose intention is to invest, I have the legal right to pull credit on that borrower.
Okay.
And that's a federal law. That's a federal law that's been in place since the 1970s. But I can't just randomly do it. Like, I couldn't just randomly pull your credit. That's illegal.
Yeah.
But if I was buying a note on a house that you were paying on, I could legally pull your credit because the intention is to purchase that loan. Now, I want to be very open about this. We respect everybody's position in this, and so what we encourage sellers to do is for them to pull it and give us a copy of it.
I see.
If they don't have that luxury or they don't have that resource, then we're more than happy to do it on their behalf as long as certain steps are followed.
Yeah.
And we are more than happy to work with them in that environment. What is crazy about this, and I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but
that's all right.
One of the things that I find, especially on season notes, and especially from private parties or investors and things like that, street-level investors, is the number of people who never have pulled credit on their borrower.
Hmm. You mean carryback guys, those kinds of notes, is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. Hmm. I would say about 97% of the carryback notes that we get in here from private individuals, whether it be attorneys or rehabbers or whomever, never pull credit on the borrower.
Wow.
And that's dangerous for two reasons. One is they don't know who they're getting in business with, which is scary. And then number two, out of those 97%, I would say 99% of them don't even have the borrower's social security number.
Oof.
And that creates a whole nother level of a federal issue, actually. And that is, on a federal side, every year, every month that homeowner is making payments, he or she or they are entitled to deduct those interest payments from their income.
Okay.
But in order to do so, they've got to get their year-end interest statement.
Right, your standard mortgage interest deduction that everybody, any homeowner would take, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what's scary about it is because these sellers don't even get a Social Security number, they never issue the year-end interest statement. Because
okay.
You have to issue it via their Social Security number.
Oh, I see. All right, order for them to protect them so that they have some evidence.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's actually a violation of the person collecting the payments. That's a violation on their part, and it's a disservice to the homeowner, because if they were to deduct, $6,000 worth of interest on a tax return, that would probably, in most cases, provide a larger refund for that homeowner.
Sure.
And so I know that's kind of a tangent thing, and that's not what today's call is about, but the way I can pull credit is due to the Fair Credit Collection Act of 1970 gives me the opportunity to go in there as long as I have a copy of the note, and my intention is to purchase it, which is why people send notes to me or deals to me, and I can pull their credit legally.
Right.
And what we do is just being good stewards. If it's a deal we don't buy, if it's a deal for whatever the reason just doesn't fit our criteria after we've done a little research, we shred all of our stuff every quarter, that including credit reports and everything else. We don't want it falling into the wrong hands. So we take a more responsibility approach to it.
Well, I'm glad we dove deep into that first one, because I could see for folks who are just getting started where that might be there's some mystery around it maybe, and it might be a stumbling block. So I appreciate you taking some time to really get in there.
You're very welcome.
So talk to us about our second point today.
Second point is home valuation. Because of the highs and lows of our economy over the last 3 to 5 years here, depending on which way you want to look at it, property values are all over the place. And some of the notes that we see that were done back in, say, 2009 and stuff are kind of even money. If they sold the house for $100,000 and they got $10,000 down, that house value may have dropped a little bit, but the reality of it is maybe it's come back up to what the original sales price was,
mm-hmm.
which is certainly workable. If it's something that it's a note that somebody on a house that somebody sold in, say, 2007 at the peak of the market,
yeah.
Chances are if they sold that house at, say, $300,000 and it dropped down to, say, $125,000, which is very common here in Arizona where I live,
you're right.
It hasn't gone back up to $300,000. So depending upon how we get deals, because deals are presented to us on a regular basis, some of them are newly created deals, which I say newly created within the last 12 months. And those houses or those properties are pretty consistent. The house was worth $100,000 6 months ago. It's still worth $100,000 today. It hasn't gone, up a lot. It hasn't gone down a lot. It's pretty even keel.
Yep.
And those types of deals are pretty vanilla, what I call vanilla deals. Okay, it makes sense. The borrower, they sold it for $100,000. They put $10,000 down. The borrower, the notes for $90,000. They made six payments, and here's what the payment, or here's what the balance is. Those are very vanilla deals. But value, every deal we buy on a performing basis is going to be looked at from two perspectives. We're going to look at it, one, does the deal stand on its own merits as far as its value is concerned? In other words, the house sold for $100,000, they put down $10,000, the note's worth $90,000, and it still checks out today, 6 months later. Or, and if that's the case, then those are what I call parallel numbers. The value of the property and the sales price are neck and neck.
Yep.
Then there's the other side of the coin where a house sold for $100,000 and the market's gone down, and let's say the house is worth $85,000, but their balance is $90,000, so now there's a negative equity in the deal.
Mm-hmm.
We'll still look at those types of deals, but we're going to base our pricing off of the lower number. In other words, we're going to base our pricing off of that $85,000 value, not the $100,000 sales price.
Okay. So you just discount that right away. And so how are you – I know you buy nationally. Can you share how you're doing your evaluations like that?
The initial evaluation when we get a deal in here, we'll either go to Clear Capital, which is a BPO company.
Sure, yeah.
That will run out and do a quick BPO.
Mm-hmm.
But in all fairness, before we invest that $100 to do a BPO, we'll use the simplest of tools. We'll go on, say, Zillow, or we'll go on Electronic Appraiser and just get some really quick numbers. One, because and we certainly don't hang our hats on this, and we certainly don't, you know, take that number to the bank. But the value that that gives us is somebody says, well, this house is worth $100,000, and I look on Zillow, and there's and it's sitting in a neighborhood that the house sales prices are between 90 and, say, 120, then it's a safe bet that that house is $100,000.
Right.
That their numbers are bankable, what I would call bankable.
Mm-hmm.
If they say the house is worth $100,000 and I pull it up on Zillow and everything in the neighborhood is $75,000, then I'm going to say that's not bankable. I'm not saying it won't happen and we'll have to dig deeper into it. But what it tells us right up front is, okay, what are we dealing with here instantaneously and how does that work? And I know that's a I know everybody's got their own opinion of Zillow and what they like and what they don't like about it. Here's my opinion on it, and here's the only reason we use it is because it's quick, it's free, it's quick and it's free, and it's fairly accurate.
Yeah,
you know, it's fairly accurate.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, we use it too in the auction business because we do stuff all over the place, but we don't order BPOs. And so, what do you see for spread? I'm like, how close are your BPOs to your initial Zillows generally? You got a feel for that?
Well, let's say it's a $100,000 house in a neighborhood between 95 and 120,
mm-hmm.
we find that our BPO values typically will come in a little bit more
mm-hmm.
than their $100,000 sales price
yep.
because. When we go for a BPO value, we don't what we're seeking and what we're looking for is a 30 to 60 day foreclosure sale. In other
mm-hmm.
words, if we got to take this thing back, how quickly can we sell it out the door?
Yeah.
And so that gives us the lower end of the spectrum. Now, if we put an appraisal against it, we usually find the appraisals typically around 10% higher than our BPOs that we get in here,
mm-hmm.
which gives us that margin of error in an uncertain world. Right now, we just, you know, you could talk to 10 investors and you're going to get 10 different answers as to where we're headed as far as an economy and as an industry and the marketplace. And so what we're looking for is, okay, where's that margin of error? How big is that margin of error for us and for everybody else?
Right. Okay.
Yeah. One of the things that we like to do is when we're buying a note is we give the seller of the note the option. We would prefer a full-blown appraisal.
Mm-hmm.
And we tell the seller, you know, full-blown appraisal is going to be a heck of a lot more solid than a BPO or Zillow or Electronic Appraiser or anything
right.
like that. And it's worth the extra money to get a full-blown appraisal. It takes a couple more days to get it, but it's certainly a lot more concrete for all parties involved. And we end up doing probably, it used to be 100% of our deals were done with appraisals. Now I would say probably 70% of our deals are done with appraisals.
Okay.
And 30% is BPO.
Cool. That's good to know. What else about property values?
The key things that we look at in property values when we're doing it is, one, we want the initial value, but then we're also looking at property condition.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get, you know, part of our process is when we get a BPO and appraisal back, one of the things we look at are the photographs.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of condition is this house in from the outside? If it's a drive-by appraisal, BPOs are what I would call a drive-by appraisal as well. But is the house in good condition? Is it in good shape? I'm not looking for a manicured yard, you know, something that looks like the Augusta National. What I'm looking for is, you know, is the house in good shape? Are there cars that are up on blocks in the driveway?
Right.
What's the street scene look like? You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we've had appraisals come back to us. I remember this one particular deal where it was in Baltimore, and they shot a street scene photograph, and there was a drug deal going down in the middle of the street.
Right. Sure.
And
a body over by the trash.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, they really didn't just send us this picture, did they? And sure enough, it was. And,
that's
and we had to, you know, that raises red flags for anybody investing. And I'm not here to judge or to critique anybody's lifestyle. At the same time, though, we have to keep in mind that we're going to be investing, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars here. So we have that
yeah.
deal has to stand on its own merits. I can't do a deal because I think it's a cool house. I can't do a deal because I like the city. It's, you know, they got a great football
mm-hmm.
team. You know, I can't do a deal because it's next to my grand, you know, it's three blocks away from my grandmother's house.
Right.
You know, I can't do deals based on those kind of emotions. I have to just let the numbers and the deal speak for itself, and then find what issues there are, and then learn and ask myself the question, can I live with this?
Right. Cool. So we had a third point, and why don't we jump into that? Because I know you don't have a lot of time today, and I know we're already running over because I kept us on the buyer credit for so long. So why don't we get into our third key?
Our third key is pay history. And this is a question that we get asked a lot. Like, and when we're buying performing notes, the payments have to be current. And the way we view current is that the payment is made within the 30-day window. And what that means is if a homeowner's payment is due on the first of the month, and they make the payment, say, on the 30th of the month, not the 30th of the previous month, but the 30th of the current month.
Mm-hmm.
And like, take for April here, you know, they pay April 1st, and then they make it by April 30th. To us, that payment is current. Now, technically, they probably had a 5-day or a 10-day grace period window to make the payment, and they got hit with a late fee and all that. That doesn't bother us. Like, we don't look at that as an industry. We look at it, okay, did they make the payment within the month that the payment was due? If so, then they're current.
Okay.
And if it goes, let's say it was due April 1st and they pay the April payment May 3rd, then to us that's 30 days late.
Okay.
With that being said, if somebody is 2 times 30, which means that happened 2 times, in a 12-month period, we're okay with that as an industry, as long as it wasn't last month and you're trying to sell me the note this month.
Okay.
You know, if it was, say, 7 months ago, a homeowner broke his leg, couldn't work, was out of work for a couple weeks, probably found him a desk job or something like that to help his family, you know, pay their bills, that happens. And, you know, if it was 7 months ago and they had this little blip on their radar screen, but since then they've been paying in a timely fashion, then to us that's an isolated moment in time. And as an industry, our philosophy as an industry and the private investor side of it, we're not here to penalize the world. We don't look at it as you should pay that price for that one isolated moment in time for the next 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's ridiculous to begin with, but because it's just not it's really not a true characteristic of who we are.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes mail will get lost, or you'll, you know, be away, and things, you know, slip through the cracks. But what you want to, sounds like what you want to try to avoid is, all right, are you bringing someone to me who's just at the front end of some decline in their situation? Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because if we're walking into that kind of relationship, then it's a whole different pricing model. You know, if I'm buying a performing loan, then my intention is I'm going to deploy the capital, I'm going to buy the loan, I'm going to put it over here in my portfolio, knowing that, hey, it could potentially go bad somewhere down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it never goes bad. And in all fairness, in our performing portfolio, we've only foreclosed on 12 houses in 15 years.
Wow.
So we have a very great track record when it comes to buying notes. And because the reason that is that when and if bad things happen to good people, we'll intervene with that person and find out, okay, how can we get this back on track? Because sticking with our business principle, and that is, we don't want to own the house. I live here in Phoenix, Arizona. I don't want to own a house in Chicago.
Right.
And it's not that I have anything against Chicago. It's I don't want to spend my weekends flying back and forth to Chicago to manage a property, to rehab it and everything else to try and get my money back out of it.
Right.
I would rather work with that homeowner in Chicago who maybe they broke their leg and they got to skip a month's worth of payments to get back on track. Okay. I would take that month's worth of payments, put it on the back of their loan, give them a 30-day reprieve, and let them get back on track, because that's a heck of a lot cheaper than me foreclosing on that property.
Right.
So that's that mindset. Now, when you get to the other side of it, non-performing loans, and I'll touch on this, and I think we need to wrap it up, but the non-performing side of it, and that is if we're buying a non-performing loan, then really what we're looking at is not so much the pay history. We know they're late.
Right.
And chances are by the time we get it, they've been late for 2 years. Or no payments for 2 years, then we're looking at just what's the asset worth, you know, because that's technically going to be our only fallback position on this loan, is to go in and take the house back. When we buy non-performing loans, our number one objective is to reinstate the loan and to restructure the loan so that the homeowner can get back on track, because we've found in that environment, if we bought 100 non-performing loans, we can get around 52% of them back on track within about 30 to 90 days, which is a
creative restructuring of payments or principal and that sort of thing.
Exactly. We can forgive. You know, when we're buying non-performing residential loans, we're typically buying. We bought them as low as 1.5 cents,
yep,
all the way up to about 50 cents on the dollar. It all depends on what the property's worth. And going back to property values that I talked about a moment ago, if a bank brings me a portfolio that is, say, I'll just isolate one loan. Let's say the loan in it's $200,000. That's the balance of the loan. And that house is only worth $100,000. Then the maximum I'm going to pay for that house is going to be about $50,000. So it's
so
easy
25
for me to
cents on the dollar.
Yeah, that'd be 25% of the UPB,
right?
Or 50% of value. But it's really easy for me with that kind of purchasing power to go back to Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner and say, okay, I'm going to forgive $100,000 worth of debt here. Or I'm going to forgive $80,000 worth of debt here, and your new loan amount is $120,000, and here we go. I can do that because I'm a private investor, and I have that flexibility. Banks and institutions cannot do that because they're federally insured institutions, and they have to play by a different set of rules and laws over and above what you and I can do as private investors. So that's the flexibility there. And that usually, when you give a homeowner that kind of break, they don't take advantage of you. They're grateful. They have more of a grateful heart than they do you know, hey, I can get one over on these guys kind of a thing.
Right. Right. And that, you know, I suppose if you're going to hold it for a long time, that's important. So, you know, if you're going to have to deal with them again and again, probably.
Absolutely. Our key number one goal with every deal that we buy is to create a relationship with that homeowner so that homeowner, when and if they run upon hard times, and those things do happen in people's lives, that they'll reach out to us, that they'll understand the freedom of reaching out to us and saying, hey, Troy, this is where we're at. You know, can you help us? And we want to keep that open door communication for them, because we understand, you know, bad things happen to good people all the time.
Right. Well, awesome, man. I really appreciate you coming on. This is the second time that you've spent. We said we were going to try and do it in 20 minutes. I think we're up to 45. And so I really appreciate you giving us all this time. I know you're a busy guy, and now this is twice that you've given to the DistressedPro.com audience. And I really, really appreciate it. And thanks for coming on here. And I hope to do something with you again soon. And I hope people find you through this.
I appreciate that, Brad. It's been a pleasure. It's been an honor to be here with you and to speak to your audience, and I hope they find some value out of what we talked about today.
I'm sure they will. Thanks, Troy.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.